It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
I've never met a foster family that's in the business to make money, and if I did, let's just say they wouldn't be a very smart person, because foster care reimbursement rates are so abysmally low in Virginia, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense.
Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton talks about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it, and vital information about free health care to the uninsured in the Richmond area during our weekly News You Can Use. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. This show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. In the greater Richmond area, an estimated 57,000 low-income residents are uninsured. Most are the working poor, who don't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, and whose employers don't provide health insurance. To meet this growing problem, the Richmond Academy of Medicine started Richmond's Access Now earlier this year. To be eligible, you must have lived in the Richmond area for at least 3 months, have no health insurance, not qualify for any government medical assistance program, and have a family income less than 200% of the federal poverty level, which currently is $20,420 for a single person and $41,300 for a family of four. 11 free clinics, the Richmond, Enrico, and Chesterfield Public Health Departments, and federally qualified health centers all will screen applicants. Those found eligible receive an Access Now card. Referrals can be made to more than 400 local physicians and the three area hospital systems, Bon Secours, HCA, and VCU, where the Access Now card is accepted just like a health insurance card. For more information about Richmond's Access Now, go to their website, accessnow.ramdocs.org, or call 643-6631. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Virginia's payments for the cost of raising foster children have been painfully low for a long time. Foster parents are paid for only about half the minimum expenses of raising those children. This gap in the cost of caring for foster children, who otherwise would have no place to live, is, according to Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton, quote, a travesty that's happened over a long time. But as a result of the efforts of Ms. Holton, formerly a City of Richmond Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court judge, and before that, an attorney with Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, this past session of the General Assembly started fixing the problem. Over the next 3 years, payments to foster parents will increase by 40%, while at the same time, higher local costs for group homes will be phased in to encourage the use of foster parents. Earlier this year, Holton spoke at the Jepson Alumni Center at the University of Richmond in an event sponsored by the Center for Civic Engagement about Richmond's broken foster care system and how to fix it. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here's part two of this two-part broadcast of a talk by Virginia's First Lady, Ann Holton.
It can be done. It does require creativity. It does. It's not easy. One of the challenges of I don't think that anybody deliberately thinks, well, let's just send all these kids off to warehouse them somewhere where they don't need to be. But one of my colleagues at Social Services, State Social Services, says, well, you know, it's Murphy's Law. Any child that comes into foster care, they always come in at 5 o'clock on Friday, right? That's just how life happens. And at 5 o'clock on Friday, you may be looking for the right placement for that child. By 7 o'clock on Friday, you're still hoping the right placement will come through. By midnight on Friday, who will take him? Where can I put this child? And the group home, the residential treatment facility, is open for business and absolutely ready to receive them. So it's sort of the default option becomes the preferential option because of its availability. To be ready for that child, we've got to work hard to recruit families even before the child comes in. We've got to be working with that family, first of all, so we're not surprised when the child comes into care at 5 o'clock on Friday. But we've also got to be working to develop a stable, so to speak, of foster parents who are ready and eager to take in challenging teenagers and been trained to do it and are getting the support and know that they're going to get the support they need to make it work. So what do we need to do? We need to recruit more families, and we need to support them better. How do we go about doing that? Well, Virginia's policies, one of the things we've discovered over this last couple of years of analysis is that our financial resources are not always aligned with our goals. So I talk about that group home that's ready to take the child at 5 o'clock on midnight on Friday. Well, I've never met a foster family that's in the business to make money. And if I did, let's just say they wouldn't be a very smart person, because foster care reimbursement rates are so abysmally low in Virginia. It wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But so our reimbursement rates are so low that it basically has been found, the Virginia rates have been found to cover about half of the minimal expenses that families are likely to incur on behalf of particularly older kids in care. So we're talking in the the average is something like $480. It went up by a sizable chunk last year, but even with that increase, it's about $480 a month. Meanwhile, we're paying the group homes $5,000 a month or the residential treatment facilities substantially more. Our financial resources are not aligned with our goals. We want people in families, but we're not sending our money in that direction. So clearly one of the things we need to do is realign our financial resources with our goals. So if we realign our financial goals, if we support families, if we get creative, I'm convinced, and my partners within the administration believe, and the localities we're working with believe, that we can really move the ball, this is almost like the moment for sort of the welfare reform of children's services. This is stuff that a lot of people have been looking at really for the last 5 to 10 years in Virginia, not just my initiative, and all of it has been pointing in the same direction. You know, we absolutely have a need for some of these more intensive facilities, the group homes and residential treatment facilities. Absolutely, there are some children who need it, but if we're using it for those who don't need it simply because we have nowhere else to put them, then we're doing those children a disservice, and we're not expending our scarce state resources as effectively as we could. It's been fun to work on it. I guess kind of the last thing I wanted to do before I stop talking and give a chance for question is stop and reflect a little bit on, looking at the Center for Civic Engagement's model of study and reflection and action, applying that to a little bit of my experience over the last couple of years. And this First Lady gig is a great gig, I got to tell you. You get, everybody wants to help you. Resources appear magically. We wanted to do some research, and we call the Freddie Mac Foundation up, who has an interest in foster care and adoption, and how much do you want? How quickly can we get the check to you? But it has been a treat. But it's been one of the nice things about it is we've really had an opportunity over the last year and a half or so to really do some study and some reflection on how we can best serve these young people. And I guess I just wanted to point out how crucially the academic world has played into our work here. We did start out by doing a research survey to find out what are some of the programs that work. Interestingly enough, one of the things we found out is there aren't as many studies of best practices programs and what works in the child welfare area as I was used to looking at some of that in the delinquency prevention, and actually on the criminal justice, juvenile criminal justice side of things, there's actually some pretty good research on what works and what doesn't. In child welfare, for various reasons, the research is harder to do, and for various reasons, there hasn't been as much of it. And so the really true, rigorous academic standard research is pretty scarce in this area. But we did find what there was, and some of the things that there were was I think I mentioned to you that there was a very clear study about kinship care being the likeliest place of success for these young people. And frankly, there were things that just helped clarify the problem. There's some very, very good studies that on the outcomes for young people who age out of care. Without family. So we did the research on the research survey. We also did our own data analysis, which was not research in the sense of studying best practices programs and what works and what doesn't work, but just really looking at the Virginia population and looking at those entry cohorts, et cetera. The Child Trends folks who did that with us were able to help us show, for instance, when we're looking at our numbers and we know the proportion of kids in congregate care is high, 24%, but we don't know, a lot of kids have a lot of needs. Maybe it needs to be there. But then when you look at that entry cohort and see that 52% of those kids are going into those placements as their very first stop, that's a figure that's meant a lot to our discussions with the legislators and with really even within the administration. We know that there are children who need these facilities, and we know that there are many who've been through all kinds of other placements before they get there. But if that's where everybody's going as their first stop, then that data analysis really tells us something that we can learn something from. The data analysis really helped us compare our situation within Virginia to others across the country to see opportunities to do better, but also to look and see something like, to look and see differentiation within Virginia and to see that there's really quite a wide range for how different localities in Virginia handle these problems, so that we could find something like the found pilot that we found in Hampton. And a lot of people knew Hampton were doing some creative things, but until our data analysis folks came in and really looked at it, we weren't able to document what exactly were they were doing and what was their level of success. So the study reflection part of this project has been interesting. Another part of what we did is we went on a listening tour back in the spring, and that was really a treat. I and a number of administration folks went all around the state and held sessions where we invited families, foster families, biological families, children, social workers, child welfare professionals to come in and tell us what was their experience of what was working and not what was not working. And one of the things they told us is we have fewer and fewer resources to recruit families. We don't have time to recruit families. We really need help on that. And that was something we were able to translate into some pretty concrete recommendations.
You're listening to a talk given earlier this year by Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton at the Jepson Alumni Center of the University of Richmond about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton in a talk given earlier this year about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it.
Working with these national Annie Casey Foundation experts who've really come in to help us guide our systems change that we're working on, we were able to benefit from some of the best expertise on what are some of the best practices, even though there isn't as much rigorous academic work out there as we might all like. These folks have been intimately involved in seeing what works in a number of other states, helping make it happen, successes, failures, learning from mistakes, and moving on. And it's been fun to watch the overlap between the folks who are really on the ground running the child welfare system in one state with the ivory tower crowd who comes in and brings their perspective and has really been terrifically helpful for us. Some of that study reflection part is humbling. You do realize that, you know, when one of the ways we got here where we are in Virginia now with such a high use of congregate care was because of we developed this Comprehensive Services Act system where we pooled our resources and made systems flexible so that the money could follow the child, and that has somehow contributed in various ways to this rise in the use of congregate care. It's good that we have a system that can fund it for the children who need it, but sort of good intentions aren't always enough. Good intentions can sometimes go awry. There are a number of folks that we've been interacting with over the last few months who think that what we're doing now about trying to reduce the use of congregate care in Virginia is good intentions going awry. There are those who think that we really ought to go back to a more sort of almost the old-fashioned orphanage system where the institutional setting can be a permanent stable home for a child for the longer haul. We and they share some good intentions towards these young people, but we're reaching some really different conclusions about it. And I guess kind of my message about that is that the whole experience is kind of humbling to remember that lots of folks with good intentions can come out in different directions on something, and lots of folks with good intentions can end up doing things that don't achieve the results you want. One of the things that my husband's administration has been doing really kind of across the board is trying to have really clear outcome goals and measure everything against those goals. And now I'm going to have trouble remembering the name of the website, but it's the Council on Virginia's Future has a website where you can go, and every single state agency is required to post what their goals are, numerically how they're going to measure them, what they're expecting to achieve over the next 3 years, and each, you know, they have to update them every quarter, et cetera. And that kind of way of thinking, I always say, you know, I'm proud to call myself a liberal. That's how you know I'm not ever going to run for anything in Virginia, or anywhere, right? You can't use that L word if you're ever planning on being on that side of politics. But the truth of the matter, as a liberal, I feel the need for, we liberals need to be even more careful with our governmental resources than anybody else, because we want government to do a lot. We want government to be able to accomplish a lot. And to do that, we're going to have to, number one, use our resources efficiently, and number two, we're going to need to be able to justify the use of those resources to the general public who we're asking to pay for them. So that kind of accountability methods way of thinking is extremely important. And I hope we're building that into this child welfare reform system in the right way. But it is humbling to watch as others strive to do the right thing, and we all strive together to do the right thing by these young people to hope that we're getting there together. The last thing I'm going to do before I sit down is just a little tiny bit of sort of how can you help. I know there's lots of good energy here and among the student body and all the reaches of the Center for Civic Engagement. Well, certainly the most obvious way folks can help children in child welfare is to think about stepping up to the plate to be a foster or adoptive parent. And when you think about those options, think about the foster care adoptions and adoptions from domestic adoption options, domestic foster care adoptions, as well as foreign adoptions. There's all kinds of benefits and challenges with all those different options, but there's 8,000 children in Virginia, of whom quite a few are looking for permanent families. There is a number on the state DSS website that where you can call to get more information. If that's not something that's right for you, think about whether it's right for somebody else, and do you know somebody else in your world who's already doing this kind of work that you can be supportive to or that you could encourage in doing this kind of work. I have a close friend who's a single mom, desperately wanted children, but never got married, and we all thought would make a wonderful mom, and she has now got three children that she's adopted through foster care in Henrico. All three of them came to her with challenges. All three are doing great, but she is a single mom, doesn't have any extended family in this area. Well, her sort of circle of friends, we've got this little group now together, and it sort of came together informally, but now it's more formal, where we make a real point of giving her relief, and, you know, I spend several hours with the 2 6-year-olds every other weekend, and somebody else takes the 12-year-old on such and such a basis, just to give mom some shopping time or some time to, you know, do errands without all that company, the kinds of things that family does for each other, but to make a special effort when you know somebody. And I'm sure we all know folks, make sure somebody gets the ride to soccer, all those things we do for each other in community. If you know of opportunities to reach out to somebody who's in the foster adoptive world and give them that little extra boost, that's one way to help. There are some organizations that work hard with these young folks. Voices for Virginia Children is a terrific advocacy group that's really focusing on foster and adoptive care and has a great website that keeps you up to date on legislation. And if you have an interest in expressing your views in the General Assembly on the various matters at issue, their website and their staff can help illuminate you on those issues. A direct service volunteer organization that works with these children is CASA, the Court-Appointed Special Advocate Groups, and there's one for Richmond, one for Henrico, one for Chesterfield. They do terrific, it's a very intensive volunteer commitment where they follow the children when they're throughout the court system and help advise the court, and they're really kind of an extra voice for the child throughout that process, and they do terrific work. There's a fairly new organization in Virginia called FACES, which I've been helping during their formative time over the last couple of years, which is Foster Adoptive Kinship Families of Virginia. And they have a website as well. And anything that you could do to help boost FACES, that organization, through volunteer work would be a wonderful, wonderful thing. All of those groups are listed on my website, which is a pretty humble little website. We haven't got a whole lot of information on there, but it does have links to those and to the State Department of Social Services, and mine is forkeepsvirginia.org. So there's lots of opportunities to get involved, especially with an academic community. I've told you already that there's not a whole lot of good research in this area, and there's huge opportunities for more research. If anybody's got that kind of an academic interest, I'd be glad to give you a wish list. And frankly, that we're making some of these changes now in Virginia. If these changes do go through, it presents some interesting study opportunities over the next few years to see how those things play out. So maybe somebody out there will jump at that opportunity to help us out in a research kind of way. Thank you again for the chance to be here. It's really always wonderful to be at the University of Richmond and to connect up with this terrific part of your University of Richmond community. And Ed, I don't know whether you or I said of my last connection with University of Richmond is that Professor Woody Holton is my brother. We all laugh when we call him Professor Woody Holton because it's hard to think of him that way when you're thinking of him, you know, doing the get your foot off me thing back when we were growing up. But it's really been a treat to be with you. Thank you.
You've been listening to part two of this two-part talk by Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio.
This week's top three tips are about child custody. The first tip is that unless there's a court custody order, both parents of a child have equal rights to physical possession of a child. The second tip is that to get a court custody order, you file a petition for child custody with the Court Services Unit of the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. You can do this on your own, by yourself, without an attorney. The third tip is that to decide child custody, a judge looks at the best interests of the child. This is based on many things, including the role you've played in the past upbringing of the child and the role that you will play in the future. for the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered on this show, email that question to marty@cvlis.org with radio show question in the subject line. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Housing discrimination is not a relic from the 1960s. It exists in Richmond, and it happens every day. Tune in next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, attorney Susan Scoble at Housing Opportunities Made Equal, talks about housing discrimination, its various forms, and what to do about it. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.